Reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Anti Lila 1:148. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jai Advaita Chanda Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Idabir Nava Kalaya Kuta Kututa Garvasya Nirvasano. So I'm reading a poem, beautiful poetry, but unfortunately I don't know the meter and the pronunciation. But I'll read the translation. My dear beautiful friend, if one develops love of Godhead, love of Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, all the bitter and sweet influences of this love will manifest in one's heart. Such love of Godhead acts in two ways. The poisonous effects of love of Godhead defeat the sincere and fresh poison of the serpent. Yet there is simultaneously transcendental bliss, which pours down and defeats the poisonous effects of the snake, as well as the happiness derived from pouring nectar on one's head. It is perceived as doubly effective, simultaneously poisonous and nectarian. Purport, this verse is from Vadanta Madhava. It also appears in the Madhya Lila, chapter 2, verse 52. It is spoken by Purnamasi. Omigana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Daksir Nulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Dapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Nidati Sapadantikam Panchakalpa Purubhyashta Kripashindu Baye Bacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare. So greetings from New York City. I'm staying here for the last few days. We have a 15-hour bhakti course at Yoga Maya to begin their 100-hour devotion section of their yoga teacher training. Always really wonderful to be there and see the sincerity of the people that are interested in learning something about bhakti. And last night, the six-hour kirtan, I really appreciate it. So well organized by Yasoda Dulal. It's just wonderful to see something that's wonderfully organized, because you don't see the management. When management is really organized, it means you don't see it, because there's no problem. Management is generally seen when there are problems. But the place was beautiful. It was another yoga studio in Midtown Manhattan, but this was like incredibly well put together. And the lady who runs it is so cultured and so organized. But it was just another wonderful pack with all the great kirtaneers. And it was kind of like one got better than the next. That was also very wonderful. Now here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya. Sri Chaitanya is God coming to be complete in his pleasure by experiencing the sentiments devotee. So, I'm the topmost devotee, Srimati Radharani, at the height of her experience of love, which is the mood of separation. So, he really focuses on cultivating this in the last part of his life, which is the last 18 years of his life, in a place called Jagannath Puri, which is Vipralamba Kshetra, which is the place where really this mood of separation is really felt. Those of you who have experience going to the places in the holy places in India, they each have a different mood. And the places in relationship with Krishna exemplify and actually project one of three prominent moods of love of Godhead. One is Madhurya, that's Vrindavan. When you go there, you can experience that sweetness and intimacy of prema or love. And when you go to Mayapur, you experience the Audaya, the feelings of magnanimity. And it's, wow, that's really a special place too. When I would take yatras to Mayapur, you know, we usually, you kind of like, your spiritual practices are kind of like an ascent. You know, you got this motor running and you're endeavoring and trying hard. But this is like it's just pouring from the heavens or something. I'm specifically in my consciousness going back there to some of my experiences. When you get magnanimity, when mercy is manifest, then beyond your efforts, something's pouring into your heart rapidly. So that's Audarya. And then when you go to Puri, it's that mood of separation, especially because of the Jagannath deity, which is a deity of Krishna in separation from Srimati Radharani. The place exemplifies that mood, and their main festival of Rath Yatra is the festival of Krishna trying to relieve his separation from Radharani, and Radharani trying to relieve her separation from Krishna by taking Krishna back to Vrindavan. We discussed that. And, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came there to attain these feelings. This is our objective, our goal. Our goal is to fill our hearts with devotion. Devotion connected Tachman Parama Prema Rup. The nature of that bhakti is that the nature of bhakti is the Parama Prema, it's the form of prema, of love for Godhead. It's some sense in the heart of an existential feeling of connectedness and devotion. That we have. Not a mental thing. It's an energy that exists that you come in contact with, which awakens that own energy within one's heart. And the combination is prema, or love. It is the existential reality that we have covered ourselves from by our misconceptions. That's, we have a relationship with God. We're identifying with something else, which is we're separate, we're independent, and therefore there is ahankara that connects us with a material body that gives us that separate identity, and our consciousness is funneled in that direction. And in that focus, we miss what is actually there, which is God, which is our relationship with God and our feelings for God. So, Chaitanya is coming to Puri to worship this deity of Jagannath and to develop this mood. This is our practice or process. We're trying to cultivate, we're trying to get a mood of devotion. That's our aspiration. We want love of Godhead. As the people who love Godhead perfectly do, the residents of Vrindavan. And we hear about them and we hanker and long for those feelings, and that becomes our bhajan, that becomes our practice. And it's a cultivation. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's God, he's the object of love of Godhead, he doesn't have love of Godhead, so God comes in this wonderful way and pursues a life to get that. He shows us, he leads the way. God doesn't have love of Godhead. He wants to attain love of Godhead. We don't have love of Godhead. We want to attain love of Godhead. There's a commonality there. Of course, there's a difference, but there's a commonality. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's entering Puri for that purpose, and that's called the Antya Leela. Of course, he's been to Puri before, but now he's settling there without leaving practically for the last 18 years of his life. So now we're at the part where he actually comes to Puri. And we're in the section of that right at the beginning. One of his most intimate associates, Srila Rupa Goswami, he joins him in Puri, and they meet, and Rupa Goswami is a very humble soul, and he's writing this poetry about Lord Chaitanya. And when Lord Chaitanya somehow discovers this poetry by seeing one of Rupa Goswami's poems, by seeing one of Rupa Goswami's poems on the thatched roof of the hut he is staying in, he becomes amazed by the depth of Rupa Goswami's realization of what his mood is, because it's kind of a very deep and hidden thing. And not only that, by the perfect expression of it. So Lord Chaitanya is so pleased by that poetry and the realization which is at the root of it. And what does that realization mean? The understanding, what does the understanding of someone's heart mean? When you understand someone's heart, that's mercy, if it's an exalted person. If an exalted person gives you their heart, reveals their inner feelings, which are exalted feelings, and Lord Chaitanya's heart is these incredible sentiments of the mood of Srimati Radharani in separation from Krishna, which is the reason, at least the internal reason for his descent. And then he sees that the Rupa Goswami, by the expression of his poetry, has understood his heart. And what does it mean? He's got mercy. And how did he get mercy? How do you get someone's heart? Well, you have to win their trust. You can't get someone's heart unless you win their trust. And how do you win their trust? By your love of them. And how do you express that love? By your unalloyed service to them. And this is the essence of bhakti. By our unalloyed service to God, God will give us his heart. I've been making that point often. It's just a very practical thing. if you have someone's heart, you can do two things better than anyone else. You can exploit them or serve them. And therefore, it's a very rare thing when someone gives their heart. It means they've experienced your devotion, and therefore they can trust you. They've experienced your love, and therefore you can trust you. So Rupa Goswami had won Lord Chaitanya's heart by his mood of service. Seva is the essence of bhakti. And what is seva? Seva is loving responsiveness. It's love expressed. So devotional service is, it's love expressed. Expressed through the faculties of the body, expressed through the faculties of the mind, expressed through the faculties of the words. It's not just an expression, it's an expression based on bhava. Just like I read a nice definition of kirtan. What is kirtan? Kirtan is when the bhava, the love, in the heart is expressed. So that's one way to show your bhakti, to show your love. Because the advancement in bhakti comes from the reciprocation of God through our expressions of love. Tesham satatiyatanam vajitam pitti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tvam yenamam upaya. For one who worships me with love and devotion, I give them the knowledge by which they can come back to them. So Lord Chaitanya, he brings all his confidential associates to hear the incredible poetry. Because the poetry encapsulates a mood that can communicate that mood. So if you're cultivating in bhakti a particular type of devotion, a depth of surrender, then a proper expression of that from the heart of someone who's pure is a jewel that you possess, because it can inspire, transfer, communicate and inspire and transfer those feelings to your own heart. And therefore, in bhakti, this kind of poetry is essential for our devotion. So what happens is when Rupa Goswami, when Lord Chaitanya brings associates, he brings his confidential associates, and one of those associates is called Ramananda Roy, who is an extraordinarily advanced soul, who was a governor, and who historically he gave up everything to just serve Lord Chaitanya, and he was also specifically well-versed in the series of poetics that express devotion. Now, Rupa Goswami, it appears, and this is my understanding, that he's done a very, very wonderful thing for the Krishna Bhakti movement. What he's done is he had an insight into the Bhagavatam, which dates thousands and thousands of years, and it predates the Natya Shastra. Now, the Natya Shastra is the Shastra. This is connected to Lord Brahma, and who inspired the sage Bharata Muni, is the theory of poetics. How powerful emotions can be created in art to perfectly communicate those emotions to those who have some aspiration to experience them. And there's a great history in Indian thought how that aesthetic experience was either transcendent or pointing to transcendence or at the minimal culturing and purifying. And this was the whole theory of Natya Shastra, that proper art, proper poetry, and there were so many rules on how you can actually perfectly encapsulate a mood so that it can be communicated to the audience. It's a deep, deep theory. So what Rupa Goswami found is that the Bhagavatam, which describes these stories of Krishna, is perfectly composed. And that's no small task. Because for the bhava to be communicated, all the elements have to be there. It's just like when you're cooking. If you want to make a fine preparation, it's not that you could put a little too much salt or less salt, or you can cook it a little more, cook it. In that way, this whole poetics was a basis of perfectly cooking a composition. And it was very, very subtle so that it would have the proper effect. So the Bhagavatam is perfectly composed. So but the rasa, the emotion that is being communicated, is bhakti, is devotion, which in the Gaudiya Vaishnav conception is not only the perfection of consciousness, but it's actually what reality is. Reality is bhakti. Reality is an exchange of love on the highest existential platform. What is actually happening is that God is exchanging love with himself by the distinctions he creates within himself, which is his different potencies, including the Jiva Shakti, the living entity. So the Krishna pastimes, they encapsulate and represent and manifest that potency. So people who want to experience love of Godhead, they open their hearts to the leelas and pastimes of Krishna. And when they open their hearts to those pastimes, they have a transcendent experience of love of Godhead. So what Rupa Goswami did, studying the Bhagavatam, is that he began to write dramas and poetical anthologies expressing in depth the sentiments expressed, especially between Radha and Krishna, which are very, very confidential. And therefore, not explained very, very elaborately. So we're up to the point now when Ramananda Roy is questioning him about the dramas that he wrote and the different poetical devices. Now, this aspect of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is very, very deep and very, very esoteric. Because unless it's heard without prejudice, with an insight and a feeling of the spirituality that it contains, it may be interpreted by our conditioned consciousness as mythological or mundane, especially mundane. But in the Bhagavatam and the commentators on the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they go great lengths to explain that although the form of these pastimes and the sentiment of these pastimes and the form of these pastimes correspond to relations in this world, it's not that they're anthropomorphic. It's not that based on human experience these leelas and pastimes are written, but rather human experience is coming from God, but transformed subtly into egoism and selfishness. And therefore, our general experience of these relationships are mixed with selfishness and mixed with lust. So if we don't hear them in the couch in the prop in the appropriate tattva or philosophy and just filter it before our prejudices, then we'll misunderstand them. Where in the Bhagavatam it's explained, the greed, the tum, what is it? In the Bhagavatam, it's explained that one who hears these pastimes actually becomes free from sex desire. Because what happens is they explain the pure experience of love in a way that even if a drop touches your heart, you become detached. Or sufficiently detached that it doesn't stir within your mind the desire to enjoy in the same way. But rather, it inspires within your heart an abject dedication to serve God. So now I'm just going to read some of them. And even in the Gaudiya Math with Bhakti Siddhanta, there wasn't a lot of discussion. Sometimes they just read it through. But Prabhupada gave us some commentary. So Ramananda Roy now is asking about how different moods are expressed in this drama that Rupa Goswami made about Radha and Krishna called the Dugdha. Radha, the Dugdha means expert in loving dealings, Krishna. So he first asks, what is the swabhava bhava? What is the nature of bhava? So he explains the nature of bhava, and that's what this verse is explaining that I just read, is that it's a flow of energy, of a desire to please Krishna. That's what love means. The desire to please Krishna. And to be with Krishna. But not selfishly, to please the person. You love the person, you want to be with them, but it's not selfish, it's to please them. And to please them is more important than being with them. So this mood, the core existential awareness of the soul, awakening to the full expression of love, it's like a river flowing. And the river has two embankments. For a river to flow powerfully, it needs two embankments. It needs an embankment on one side, an embankment on the other side. If one of the embankments is weak, then the river kind of spreads out and doesn't flow as forcefully. So the embankments in prema or love, this bhava, are union and separation. And to explain, so if the love is flowing, both of those experiences are there in the existential reality. And in that existential reality, this bhava, these sentiments of pleasure in the heart to serve and please God in an overwhelming, consuming way. And isn't that what the absolute consciousness should be? That there's a feeling of perfection, something that you're absorbed in, overwhelmed with. So, in his poetic way, Rupa Goswami has this incredible verse that explains that if you develop this feeling, then you get the bitter and sweet influences. The bitter influences are the separation. The sweet influences are the union. And so it acts in two ways. And it's severe, that separation, because there's love. When the love is manifest to the highest degree, the pain of separation manifests to the highest degree. And then, but simultaneously, this transcendental bliss, which defeats the poisonous effects of the snake, as well as giving you happiness. So what it's saying is a very interesting thing. For the love to flow powerfully, there must be union and separation. There must be this nectar and there must be this poison. What is the poison? It's separation. And what happens in that separation? What happens in that separation is that one's love increases. And when the love increases, it actually defeats this poisonous separation. So it's kind of a guidepost to understand that this ultimate reality is just churning with love. And has separation as union, and separation is like poison, and union is like nectar. But even in the separation, the love of Godhead that manifests subdues that pain, while you're getting the nectar on your head. Ramananda Roy further inquired, upon hearing of my cruelty, moon-faced Radharani established some kind of tolerance in her aggrieved heart. But then she might turn against me, or indeed, being fearful of the lusty desires invoked by the bow of the formidable Cupid, she might even give up her life. Alas, I have foolishly uprooted the soft creeper of her desire just when it was ready to bear fruit. Purport after me, very cruel to Sri Mati Radharani. Krishna is repenting in this way. The cruelty is Krishna is separate from Radharani. And then, anyway, he's thinking she might give up her life. And then he's lamenting, just when in this exchange of rasa, she's about to bear the fruit of her desire. I'm so cruel. I've uprooted that creepa. So it's a very, very intensity. There's an intensity. but it's expressing, there's an intensity of love. And that's rasa. Rasa means a consuming emotion. And this is how a consuming emotion in these feelings is actually expressed. Through union, through separation, through disappointment, through happiness, jubilation. Desiring the happiness of his association and embraces, my dear friend. I disregarded even my superiors and relaxed my shyness and gravity before them. Furthermore, although you are my best friend, more dear to me than my own life, I had given you so much trouble. Indeed, I even put aside the dedication to my husband, a vow kept by the most celebrated women. Alas, although he is now neglecting me, I am so sinful that I am still living. Therefore, I must condemn my so-called patient. So it's sometimes expressed that this devotion is so overwhelming that that's our goal, love of Godhead. And it's the not an ordinary mental emotion, but it's an existential, and it's an existential reality of the essence of God's bliss potency. How overwhelming that must be. That's what's being expressed here. How overwhelming that must be. And that's what Leela is. Leela Shakti. There's a potency of pastimes that create, not just create, but express the most overwhelming feelings of love of Godhead. That Radharani is condemning that she's living, that she's tolerating. That in separation from Krishna, she's still living, so she's thinking, what kind of love do I have? I was engaged in my own playful activities in my home, and because of my childish innocence, I did not know right from wrong. Therefore, it is good for you to have forced us into being so much attracted to you, and then to have neglected us. Now you are indifferent to us. Do you think this is right? Our hearts are so polluted by miserable conditions that we are certainly going to hell. Nevertheless, Krishna does not give up his, this is Radharani speaking, his beautiful, loving, smiling, which is full of cheating tricks. And this is spoken to Radharani by Lalita. Oh, Srimati Radharani, you are very intelligent. How can you have developed such loving affection with this deceitful debauchee from the neighborhood of the cowherds? So again, in this poetics of spiritual love, this is the feelings. And the feelings, what it's saying is, these expressions and this drama that we see here in a perverted way somehow exist in the ultimate reality and perfection. O Lord Krishna, you are just like an ocean. The river of Srimati Radharani has reached you from a long distance, leaving far behind the tree of her husband, breaking through the bridge of social convention and forcibly crossing the hills of elder relatives. Coming here because of fresh feelings of love for you, that river has now received your shelter, but now you are trying to turn her back by the waves of unfavorable words. How is it that you are spreading this attitude that's just spoken to Krishna? So, the story of Radharani, and spoken in the Bhagavatam, hinges on a proper moon, proper day, where the setting is so conducive, just as the moon is on the horizon with a reddish tint, and the fragrance of the flowers are blooming to the maximum degree. And the weather is the perfect. Krishna, desiring to please his devotees, blows his flute. And the gopis, hearing the love of Krishna for them, cannot be checked by anything. That love that one feels is so forceful, cannot be checked by anything. And then out of all risk, they run to Krishna. This is yoga. Meditation, the focus on the object of meditation, is so forceful it cannot be checked in any way. So she goes to the forest, and Krishna is there, and then he greets them very, very formally. They think, this is strange. We've left everything to come to him. And then he says, you know, it's very, very dangerous in the forest. You know, you should go back. I'm worried for you. And they think, this is very, very strange. So Krishna is looking at them, and he sees they're smiling. And then he tells them how beautiful they are, and therefore how improper it is for them to be there in the middle of the night with him. And he preaches to them Dharma, which is quite appropriate, about a woman's duties and responsibility, because they left everything, even their children, everything. And then and then what happens is, when he's talking to them like that, they're kind of like embarrassed, and they're feet are just kind of playing on the sand, and they're looking here and there. And then Krishna says, well, you're looking here and there, you came to see all these sights of the forest, now you can go back. And at that time, they become very morose. So if you look at the inner sense, what's happening, the inner sense, the soul's awareness by Leela, by pastimes, is awakening to the fullest expression of love in the most inclusive way, which is for God, which is the eternal reality in love. Of course, if you serve others in cognizance that who they are is in relationship with God, then your needs become satisfied in relationships. And at the same time, your love becomes connected to transcendence. And your service for the object of your love in relationship is really being served, because they're being connected by transcendence. Anyway, the gopis actually chastise Krishna And they explain, when one approaches you in the form of Narayan, someone surrenders, you give shelter. We are leaving everything for God. How can you not give us shelter? What type of God are you? What type of person are you that someone seeks full shelter of you in the purity of love? How can you not accept them? So sometimes people connected with Radharani may chastise Krishna. How can you turn the gopis back after what they did to take shelter of you? In fact, their love is so great, how can you even repay them? Even if you accepted them, what to speak of sending them back? So through all these exchanges, what's happening is the Leela Shakti is creating experiences that invoke love and awareness of God to the highest degree. And that's what the author of the Vedas, Vyasadeva, saw when he meditated on the absolute truth to explain the Vedas. So first he wanted, the Vedas means what? Vedaishta sarve ham eva vedo vedanta vid veda veda. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, by all the Vedas I am to be known. So in Vyas, try to realize the Vedas. He first tried to realize the absolute truth, and he saw a Pashyat Purusham Purnam, that God's a person. And what he does is enjoy exchanges of love. That's what the absolute reality does. That's what the ultimate reality is. It's love. It's rasa vai saha. It is rasa. It's overwhelming bhakti rasa. And the Krishna Leela and Krishna pastimes and the poetry of Rupa Goswami perfectly express that in such a way that someone hears them with the right aspirations, those same feelings come into their heart. Now, I really probably have to get going because I have so much to do today. But if anybody would like to just ask one or two questions, or say hello. Okay, anybody like to say hello? Hi, Bo. Can you hear me?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Were you able to hear the class?
Yes, but suddenly it had gone off for a moment. Just when you asked for folks to say hi, so.
Okay, who is this?
This is Bhakti and Stella, and we have.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
We have some special guests at our house today, Preetu Swava and Donna Kaley.
Who's that?
Do you want to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Preetu Swava.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Great that you're on. Wonderful.
Yeah, very nice to hear you. Special mercy. We're just visiting Carl and Stella, my wife Donna Kelly and I, just for overnight.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all.
Hit the right day of the week. Thank you for the, heart-reaching katha.
Thank you. Very well. Anybody else? Maharaj,
do you have time for a question still? Or?
I do, Mooney. Please, thank you.
My question is not fully formed in my mind, but I think in the act of trying to get it out, it will be.
I think it's great, yeah.
So,
I love it.
One thing that, I'm not super familiar with the Natya Shastra tradition, but from the little that I know that they make a big deal of the fact that for people to come together and experience bhava, they have to be like-hearted. And I forget the exact word. I think it's something like sahrida or sahridaya, something means they share one heart.
Yeah.
I think in our shastras we say like, what is it, sajatiya or something like that, you know.
Right.
And I guess, Marsh, first it made me wonder if that fact, you know, helps illuminate certain things in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that often aren't clear. And then I wanted to ask you more about how we practice in relation to that. So if I may,
right.
Like, so my understanding of being like-hearted is something like, if you don't bring someone, like if someone knows nothing of classical music and they bring them to a concert of classical music, they won't get it, let's just say. They might say it sounds pretty, but without the right kind of training or the right kind of samskaras, they won't be able to enter into the nuances of the beauty. And
right.
and in the same way, you know, we could imagine like, you know, bringing someone to watch like a documentary or something that's very powerful about a certain group of people that have suffered, and someone who's not sensitive to them might like laugh or something at the wrong moment and ruin it
right.
for everybody else. And so
right.
I guess given that, do you think this helps explain why, especially in the early times of the Lord's movement, they were very much, they didn't want outsiders, you know, like when the Sankirtan movement started, like when someone who was not really part of the inner group tried to participate, the Lord would be upset about it? That's part of my question. The second part is about our life and developing the right kind of samskaras. If you don't mind,
okay,
I'll hold on to that for a minute.
Yeah. Now, let me say that first, that rasa, right, there's a sense that it doesn't reach fruition when it's not experienced together. And it's obvious. I mean, it's obvious in one sense. Like, let's say just say a boy and a girl are sharing some intimate feelings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. And then, you know, the father kind of walks in, right? And he doesn't really, you know, it's his daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really share the intimate feelings, right? Then they can't express them, right? Because he doesn't have access to them. And it's always a sensitivity in opening your heart, in a way, to anyone, right, who can't read it properly because they don't have the appreciation or access to it, you know. I mean, even the example would be is like around your daughters, right? If, let's say, your friends are there and you're experiencing the way you are with your friends, right? If your daughter is there, right, because she has, they don't have the access to understand that, nor is it the way you project yourself to them, then your feelings of that mood of friendship cannot manifest there.
Mm.
So there's some kind of common understanding that intimate expression, right, is suitable, right, for a certain person that shares that, and that you don't want it viewed by others who will misunderstand it. So in the same way, in rasa, the feelings, in Rasa Shastra, it says that unless everyone's together, it won't manifest in that way. So when Lord Chaitanya was opening his heart to love of Godhead in the most intimate ways, and doing kirtan, they, you know, outside people, if one person was there, right, who didn't have the understanding, you would feel it in the air, and Lord Chaitanya wouldn't be able to express themselves. So it's the same thing. I mean, even with the Antilila, I'm kind of explaining these things, but, you know, 40% of the class is just philosophy before even I read it, you know?
Yeah.
Just so that I can, you know, I feel that there's a common experience of it to a certain level, you know? And that's the way Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta were in terms of that. And which is also why, even, you know, reading this at the beginning and kind of looking ahead, I'm always trying to see if within this section, one, if there are relevant points that I could express to everyone. And two, if there are not, whether I will continue this particular subject on the Sangha. You know, I mean, I'll have to look forward. So I think, definitely speaking, that there's a definite element, even in practical life and spiritual life, et cetera, that deep feelings cannot be appreciated in the group unless there's some commonality of understanding.
Well, it's funny, something just struck me, and again, sorry, excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
I still want to save the second part of this question, but if I may, something struck me that you said that I always, you know, I think my guess is you've experienced this too, Maharaj, but do you find sometimes when, like, when there's some kind of public, whatever you want to call it, some kind of public program, you feel like, I feel like when I was in the ashram, there was some, I felt a tension myself where, if there's new people there, like, my head would explode if we're discussing things. Like, I couldn't get into, like, high-level discussions, nor could I. It's an interesting tension we face that we're trying to share this with people, and yet we're trying to develop it ourselves. And it maybe we're not always really sensitive to navigating that dynamic.
It is.
I don't know. I'm just wondering. Yeah.
Well, no, I understand that. And I mean, like, one thing that I've really tried to do is always make things accessible to who's ever there. I mean, yeah, and it depends on the amount of couching you do on the subject, you know? And then you hope on a certain level everyone does appreciate it, you know? The most difficult lecture in the world to give would be a Sunday feast lecture at an ISKCON center.
Uh-huh.
I'm sitting there, and then, you know, you have, you know, first of all, you know, you have people that have been there for a long time, then, you know, people are new, and then you have people that walk in, right, and someone brings their mother, you know, to check out the temple for the first time, you know. But that's what I feel is the art, and that's what I try to really hone into, you know? And I've done this because I've taught these things, you know? It basically, and I think what Prabhupada did, because he also spoke about these things, but what you do is you become empowered to explain them when you first speak basic things. So I remember speaking the 10th canto in Vrindavan, and I would always start by speaking about detachment, you know, and after we have, you know, and then by speaking and speaking and speaking and speaking, then at a particular time you get empowered to go forward and explain the pastimes of Krishna in a way that people have some access to. Now, I'm doing a 15-hour bhaktis, of course, and I felt it was really a challenge this year because somehow or other, I don't know, there were people that knew more and people that knew less. I mean, it was supposed to be an advanced teacher's training, right?
Yeah.
And one lady didn't know what advanced teacher training in yoga. And one lady asked, what does vritti mean, right?
Yeah.
Yoga, chitta, vritti, no, they asked, what does vritti mean? You know, so, I mean, you know, people are doing these yoga trainings, some would just sweat. And then there's other people that went to probably things in Yoga Maya and things that got some philosophy. And then, you know, how do you do it? You know, but there's always a way. I mean, you know, in communication. What was your second question?
Well, the second one, Maharaj, by the way, just a footnote. When I hear you say that, I have to wonder, it seems to me there's more yoga teachers than yoga students in the world. But that's a separate discussion.
I thought of another thing. I thought of the same thing. It's kind of, even in the yoga world, honestly speaking, you know, the people who are sincere, they're kind of realizing that it shouldn't be advertised as yoga teacher training as much as yoga education. You know, it became like a multi-marketing money.
Yeah, absolutely. I know.
You charge money. Yeah, and I think the people that are coming to it now, it's more people that just want to learn more. But definitely speaking, in fact, when I spoke to James Bay, who's in the yoga scene, I really appreciate what he said. And he's saying in the Bhakti tradition too, not just the yoga tradition, that to be teachers you need more experience, and it's not just experience of God, of sadhana. That's why I'm looking forward, in one sense, to leave New York at this time. I mean, it is hopping. I mean, there's just so many people interested. I did this Remembering September 11th.
Yeah.
It was such a nice audience. And we had about 50, 60 people. And such nice people came. And you'll only understand this. Others won't. I went 4 for 4. But anyway, what happened was, it's great. We had this fireman there. We got to honor this fireman from Engine 15, right? And he was actually a yoga teacher, And it was so nice, And because I was speaking about the philosophy, one of the nicest things of the philosophy was duty before self,
Yeah.
And just to repeat it to everyone, it was so beautiful because I had lunch with the firemen the day before. He came to our Bhakti immersion retreat. And, he was explaining to me, it was so beautiful, like when he went there, right, he said, firemen means you are ready to run in that building and risk your life without thinking of it. Happy are those kshatriyas whose battles come unsought, There's a spirit, but he said when he was there, he's such a soft-hearted guy, when he saw that building go down, he said, you can't imagine the grief that he felt. And then he said he was overcome with guilt. It's such a nice spiritual feeling in that relationship. You know what I'm saying? That's selfishness, like, oh, why am I saved? But why am I alive? And he just figured, I'm going to be alive now. I have to really use my life. I have to make some meaning out of it, some purpose. And from that, he came to yoga, and now he's come to bhakti. But anyway, I forgot the...
That was in the context of you were explaining just how delicate it is to kind of manage the fact that there are people in the audience who may want to develop more bhava, and there may be new people, and sometimes to kind of satisfy everyone is a delicate art.
It's always in anything.
You've given me a lot of time. I do have the second part, but I'm happy to save it, Maharishi, if you think time.
Yes, the second question. Right.
Okay, so as we're aspiring sadhakas, we want bhava. And
right.
I wonder sometimes, you need this lightheartedness. I mean, you can't experience like the kind of bhava of Shakespeare without knowing a hell of a lot. And we're reading the Bhagavata. And I'm just some guy from New Jersey, right? I mean, what's our background? And I feel like I wonder sometimes what do we need? Both just kind of culturally, but also spiritually. I was thinking about that great sadhu. I don't know if it's Puri Maharaj that said, you think you can understand Radha and Krishna. You don't even know the love of a normal mother for her child, right? We come from America, where, for political reasons, whatever, we don't have to get into it, but that's what he was talking about. And he said, how can you understand bhava? I wonder, do we need to have a kind of cultural education, so to speak? I mean, do we need to be trained in certain ways? Lord Chaitanya's followers were incredibly sensitive, learned, aesthetic kind of men. I guess I'm just wondering to enter into some of these things. At the same time, my guess is, Marge, that The biggest problem is just that if we're not other-centered, if we're not centered on others, you could be as culturally educated as you want, and you will never understand bhakti. And so I guess I'm just asking you, what are the kind of things you think
you
need to develop?
I mean, there's such a tension, isn't it? There's such a tension, isn't it? Such a deep point. Because Prabhupada, right, he really tried to give the culture, And in many ways, he didn't just try to give philosophy, he tried to give the culture, And it's such a sensitive thing. It's funny, and I was just thinking of culture, in ways, people are cultured in certain ways and not cultured in others, and you have to figure what are the ways that are important, I was just thinking, when I went to the Bhakti immersion retreat, because I'm kind of a monk, I didn't really feel like, sit at the tables and hang out with all the people that are, just socializing in one sense, right? So whenever I would get my food, I would sit right at the corner alone, right? But inevitably what would happen is that, someone would come and just sit with me because their culture was someone shouldn't be alone, right? And it was really like a genuine feeling, right? Sometimes it was a lady that would come over, it's kind of like the culture was nice on one level, wasn't it, right? That people are sensitive to others, and maybe some of the technical things were not there either. So, it's a very, very, what I'm seeing is it's a very fine line. But what I'm seeing is last night, how this Ajahn Mill since birth has been doing kirtan. And when you do kirtans in these yoga places and things like that, the depth in which people give themselves to God and the holy name is so profound. Really. At the same time, you understand, and I spoke about this with Kasuba, that along with that, you need a real philosophical basis, And then when you put I don't know. I really have to think about it, how well and how deeply people are understanding. And I think there's simple things that people are really understanding deeply. And it's so amazing when I give my teacher training, I'll have to kind of hang up soon because I actually have to kind of get ready for that and go. Got to pack and do things for some meeting today. When I go to the teacher training, I could speak so directly about God, You know what I'm saying? It's not even like have to explain God's existence. I can speak everything in our philosophy, basically. Everything practically, but at least surrender to God, part of God, love of God, goal of life, right? It's right in the people's frame of reference. So I think my ultimate conclusion in answer to your question is that, samskaras and things are very complex, but in expressing things to Americans, right, there are very powerful strengths in terms of the level of integrity that people have, really, especially at a certain level, the level of integrity people have. At least people are coming forward to this type of thing and their belief in God, And their general culture of kindness and altruism and things like that. I don't know. I mean, Prabhupada, on his strategy, right? Have people try to develop compassion and do things and give and how other things get mixed in. This is a really fascinating question. It's beyond the scope right now. But I'll also call and talk to you about it personally. But I really have to go because I have to go to this last of the 5 3-hour teacher trainings. I may call you later. Okay.
Thank you for the time.
Quickly.
Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello quickly?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, we'll go now. Hare Krishna.